Welcome to episode 264 of the Ski Podcast, and thanks for joining us, listener. I'm your host, Ian Martin. Today, we're going to be finding out about the Tyrol West region in Austria. Plus, we'll be looking at some of the best new ski helmets and goggles on the market for this winter. We also have an update from the Sheffield Ski Festival, news from Madonna di Campiglio, and news of their best ever British performance in the World Cup slalom in Levi. Now, before we meet our guests, I'd like to thank Tyrol Austria for sponsoring the Ski Podcast and making this winter's episodes possible. Producing these podcasts takes a huge amount of time, and our partnership means I can keep delivering weekly podcasts. Plus, it means you can find out more about the fantastic ski areas in the Tyrol and more about Lebensgefühl, the classic Austrian way of life that you'll find there. So, a lot to look forward to this week. Let me start by introducing my guest today. Firstly, I'm delighted to welcome Simone Zangal from the West Tyrol Tourist Board. Hi, Simone. How are you?
Hello. I'm really good. I'm excited to talk to you.
Oh, and whereabouts are you today?
I am situated today in Landeck. That's in the heart of Tyrol West, actually. And I woke up to a winter wonderland because it dumped down some snow at night. So, it's perfect to talk about skiing today.
Lovely. Can you actually see snow out of your window just now?
Yes, I can. It's really nice.
Oh, and what altitude is Landeck then?
It is about 850.
Nice. So you've got snow down to 800.
Yes, really nice. It was not so nice to drive on it, but it's nice now to look at it.
Secondly, I'm pleased to welcome a guest that many listeners will know well. He is not just the equipment expert for the Ski Podcast, but also for Full Line Magazine and The Telegraph. He is the ski kit guru. I'm delighted to welcome back Al Morgan. Hi, Al. How are you?
Not in a snowy place, unfortunately, but it is beautifully crisp this morning in blue skies. But I am good, thank you. Thanks for having me back on, Ian.
It's a pleasure. It's actually 0 degrees outside here in Brighton, and it did snow here yesterday, albeit in that kind of, you know, slushy, wet kind of way. So we're getting excited about winter. The last time I saw you was at the London Snow Show. Question I always like to ask my guests is, when did you ski or snowboard last? I'm guessing, Al, that you haven't been skiing in the last month or so since we met.
No, but oh my, I've done a lot of mind surfing, as it were, in terms of snow. I am so revved up for the season. I'm excited. But no, not from a couple of months yet.
Okay. When will your first trip to the snow be then?
I'm going away with my wife and my kids for Christmas into the Aspasquilly. I'm super excited about it.
Excellent. Will you be in Tiin? Because I recall we met last year in Tiin around that time. Is that your regular destination at Christmas?
Yeah, that's where we were last year. That's where we're going to be this year. Exactly.
Cool. And I also recall that, you know, when you go out, not only do you have a whole family in the car, but you have a huge amount of kit that you take out to test as well.
It's hilarious. Every summer and autumn, I'm under strict instructions at home that we take minimal kit, and it never happens. We have a massive vehicle and a roof box, and it's brilliant. What an opportunity to go out and have fun and get some work done as well.
Cool. So four of you in the car, how many pairs of skis might you take on that trip then?
6 to 10.
Yeah, you need a roof box for that. Let me turn to Simone. If you've got snow outside, have you been skiing at all this winter yet?
No, not yet. It was last winter the last time.
Yeah, and that would have been around April of last year. Which resort would you have skied in?
I ski in more resorts. So I like the Fennet, our house mountain skiing lift, and I also like the resorts around us. So Sagtanton and Ischgl and Sea and Kappel. So I like to switch around a bit.
Well, we will be covering the Fennet resort and the other resorts when we move on to Tyrol West. And I mentioned, you know, temperatures have obviously dropped in the Alps this week. We've seen snow in Austria. The glacier areas there have been open for weeks. They'll be joined by Tiin and Val Thorens in France. And by the end of the month, plenty of others, including Ischgl, Val d'Isère, etc., will be joining them. Now, I mentioned in the intro, Britain had a great result at the Levi World Cup this weekend. If I told you Dave Ryding was seventh, you might think, wow, that's a great start. That guy is so consistent. Even in his retirement season, he's still got it. But the big news is that he wasn't even the highest placed Brit. Laurie Taylor pulled off a stunning second run, the fastest of the day, to finish in fourth place. He was 0.04 of a second off the podium. And, you know, this is just so interesting to me. You know, Laurie's been on the circuit, I think this is his 9th year now. And it was only 2 years ago he got his first top 20 result. He followed that up in March of that season with his first top 10. He got an 8th at Aspen. And last year, his best result was 12th. With, you know, 4 finishes out of 11 races. So this fourth place is a huge jump up and very, very exciting, you know, in this Winter Olympic year. So, you know, we're supporting all the British skiers in every discipline, but that just makes it slightly more exciting overall. And regular listeners might recall Luca Carrick-Smith had his World Cup debut in Levy. It actually meant there were 4 British skiers on the start line for the first time ever. He didn't qualify for the second run this time, but it was a great experience for him. The next race is in Obergurgl this weekend, so it'll be really interesting to see what happens there with our British skiers. Talk about GB Slow Sport. I was at a GB Slow Sport event last week in London, hosted by Madonna di Campiglio. And listeners might not be aware, the resort has recently introduced a cap on skiers for this winter. So I took the opportunity to speak with Andrea Bussignani from the Tourist Board to find out more.
I'm here now with Andrea Bussignani from Madonna di Campiglio. Had really interesting presentation just now, finding about the history of Madonna with skiing dating back to 1910 and finding about the Tre Tre, the slalom race that happens in January. And we're always looking forward to that because Dave Riding has done very well there previously. But we were also chatting earlier about a new policy that you're introducing to limit the number of skiers on the slopes. And I wondered if you could tell me a little bit more about that.
100%, yes. Thank you for having me. So this year we decided to put a cap on the daily passes in Madonna di Campiglio. We decided to promote the policy of less is more, given the fact that we value a lot the quality of skiers in Madonna di Campiglio, of their day of skiing. And so we wanted to put a cap on the most requested days. So we've got the Christmas period, a week in Christmas, and a week in Carnival, which are the busiest time of the year in Madonna.
And to clarify, Carnival means mid-February.
Mid-February, yes, yeah. Yes. So this year we decided to put and do a test. So we've put a cap on of 14,000 daily passes,
right,
that can be bought at the same time for that single day. Of course, you have seasonal pass holders. You've got multiple day pass holders. Of course, this one here are excluded from this policy, and this is why the number 14,000
is. But the point of that, it will still restrict numbers on the slopes, and the idea is to make it safer for those skiers who are on the slopes.
100%. So make it safer and make it enjoyable. Because, of course, if you go in onto a ski resort and is fully crowded, and then in an hour you'll be able to do just one slope because the ski lifts are too crowded, and on the slope there's too many
for people. Sure, no one wants that. I mean, I think historically people are kind of mindful of the fact that in mid-February sometimes get bigger queues. I think everybody's heard of over-tourism now, and we've seen it in different places. So this policy is a way of ensuring that over-tourism isn't a factor in Madonna di Campiglio.
100%. We are pioneers, so we are the first Italian resort to do that, so let's see how it goes.
Cool, well, that's brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
One more final bit of news, this time from the UK. Regular listeners will recall I interviewed Sam Croft from the Save the Sheffield Ski Village campaign in episode 260 at the London Snow Show. He told us about the Sheffield Ski Festival, and that event happened last weekend. So let's hear how it went.
Hi, Ian. I'm just getting in contact to let you know how well our event went last weekend outside Sheffield Cathedral. So to those who don't know, us at Revive Sheffield Ski Village, we're pushing to get the Sheffield Ski Village rebuilt up to its former glory days. And to support that, we put on this event where we built this huge rail jam setup outside the iconic Sheffield Cathedral alongside SHAF, the Film Festival, and other amazing partners. We could have got a little luckier with the weather, but we pushed on. Big thanks to everyone who made it happen and stood out in the rain. The riders were unreal. Big thanks to Sheffield Unis, both of them, and Loughborough Unis for really, really coming down, making the scene, and helping us get some good content. Now, this is definitely not the end of our story. So if you want to keep up to date on what we're working on, go ahead to our Instagram at rssv.snow. The next step for us is trying to get a permanent facility built. So wish us luck.
Right, let's move on to our main topic today, and that is Tyrol West. Thank you for joining us, Simone. I'm really interested to hear about Tyrol West. It's an area I don't know as well. I did mention in the last episode, I have been to Landeck before, albeit inadvertently. I think it's pretty obvious Tyrol West is in the west of Tyrol, but I wondered if we could get a start by getting a sense of where it is and how you get there.
Yeah, that's true. Tyrol West is situated in the west of Tyrol, and it's basically, I would say, in the middle of the most famous skiing areas in the Austrian Alps. So we always say we are situated in the heart of the Austrian Alps.
So Landeck, we mentioned, you can get there. You know, when I travelled there, I was on a train from Zurich to Landeck, and you know, traveling by train is pretty straightforward. You know, Landeck is I guess the start of it, and there are different villages in there. What are the airports that you'd fly to? I guess Zurich is the main one, is it?
It is also Innsbruck. So Innsbruck is the nearest airport, and it's about an hour of drive away, so you can also travel to Landeck with the train. It's a really spectacular fly-in if you ever flew into the airport in Innsbruck. It's in between of the mountains. It's super nice. Super nice and little airport, and an hour of drive away. But of course, you can also fly into Zurich, and it's really easy to go to Landeck as well with the train. It's about 2 and 45 minutes, so you can choose both airports, I guess.
Cool. And so you're in Landeck, but Tyrol West is evidently like a region. So which villages or towns are we thinking of when we talk about Tyrol West?
There belong 6 villages to Tyrol West. And there is the city of Landeck and Zams and Fliers. These are villages situated around our house mountain, the Fennet. And we also have 3 smaller villages, which is Toberdil, Grins and Stanz. And they have about 500 locals there, and a bit higher up the mountain, and they're really, really charming villages.
And you mentioned, I like you, the way you describe it as your house mountain,
yeah,
which is Venet. That's not a particularly huge area. Where is that located next to? Is it next to Landeck, or is it next to one of the other villages?
It is next to Landeck and Zams. Yeah, it's a smaller skiing area. It's really nice and sweet. It's about 11 kilometers of pistes, but it's a free ride paradise. So a secret tip for free riders, if people love powder, then you should go to the Fennet, because it's also not that risky than in other more higher regions. So the pros love to go for some powdering up the Fennet.
Venet itself, then, you mentioned Landeck is 850 meters. So what kind of altitude does the lift serve area go up to?
It's about 2,000.
And, you know, I was reading around the website. It looks like Tyrol West is really good for ski touring as well.
That's true, actually. We have some really nice little mountain huts you can ski tour up. So if you don't want to see any people, then you just take your ski tours and tour up in the winter wonderland and be on your own, free your mind and just enjoy nature. So it's really nice here as well to ski tour. Yes.
Yeah, that's certainly one of my motivations for going ski touring, to have a bit of the mountain to yourself.
Yes.
You know, we mentioned, you know, Venet, the local ski area, the house ski area, as you put it. But I think one of the points of Tyrol West, I mean, we were chatting before we started recording, is that you have that, if you choose to stay in one of the villages, you have that opportunity to be completely away from it all, as if you were ski touring, but still be able to access those bigger ski areas. You said you like to ski in Ischgl and St. Anton. You can access those easily as well.
It's really easy, yes, because we have the ski safari shuttle. You can say in the evening before, I would like to ski tomorrow in St. Anton. You just text the shuttle. They pick you up in the morning from your accommodation, bring you to the skiing area, for example, St. Anton, Ischgl. We even go to a glacier. It's the Kaunertaler Gletscher. It's really easy. They bring you back at night. You can also decide to stay out and après-ski somewhere. It's really best of both worlds in Tyrol West, actually.
Oh, so it's I looked up on the web. It's just €10 for that transfer. It almost sounds like a private transfer. You saying they pick you up from your accommodation,
Yeah, they
do. And then you can just say what time you want to come back.
I think they have two times when you come back. You come back directly after skiing, or you can come back after après ski. So there are two times you can choose to get picked up.
Okay, and they'll take you straight back to your accommodation again.
Yes.
Right? Okay, that sounds brilliant. So, you know, you could do that. So for 10 euros, you could go out from your accommodation in Tyrol West and go to St. Anton, Lech, Ischgl, you said the Kaunertaler Glacier, and then also Surfhouse as well.
Yeah, Surfhouse with Sliders is in there as well. Yeah, that's a very family-orientated skiing area.
So overall, then, I found this on your website, but you could access 12 different resorts, 1,500 kilometres apiece and over 400 lifts, which compares fairly well with the 11 kilometres at Venet, but if you wanted to do that as well.
Yeah, best of both worlds.
Obviously, those are kind of, more famous resorts, bigger resorts, but another one of the advantages of Tyrol West then is it's much more affordable to stay there than some of those other resorts.
Yeah, that's true. The accommodations here are cheaper than if you would stay directly in Ischgl or in St. Anton.
But perhaps you mentioned that you've got the opportunity to get away from it all when you're ski touring. And in Tyrol West, would it be more of a destination then? I'm thinking for someone who wants to be, let's say, in the heart of nature or in the mountains itself.
Yes, I think that. It's really beautiful to do some winter walks here and some snowshoe hiking and ski touring, as you said. So you're really in the middle of the mountains, and you can be really on your own as well and just be free with your mind.
Nice. So good for a romantic getaway.
Yes.
And I was reading that there are various other activities you can do. I mean, I go swimming in the sea from time to time here in Brighton, you know, through the winter. But I noticed that you offer ice bathing.
Yeah, that's a new offer we do this winter. And I'm not sure yet if I try that, if I'm brave enough as well. but it's in my calendar, so I will at least have a look and go there. Yeah, that's new in our program, and that's also free for our guests, so they can join and try that out. Think it could be cool, literally.
literally cool. Are we talking about like cutting a hole in the ice of a lake then and dipping yourself in? Is that what
it
is?
We will see how cold it will get. But that could be that there is also some ice there, yeah. It's not as high up as other lakes, but it could be that there is some ice there as well, yeah.
Well, I think we can guarantee it would be cold enough. And that's a free activity as well, you said.
Yes, you can. We have our guest card for our guests. And that's one of the activities you can do in our weekly program.
I read about that as well. So the Tyrol West card. So as long as you're staying in accommodation in Tyrol West, you get the Tyrol West card. And that gives you a bunch of discounts and free things. What else does that cover?
It also covers, for example, the local buses. So that's also our contribution to the environment. So it's not the ski safari shuttle, but it's the local buses. And it's also, you can also go into some museums for free and into our local gorge in Sams. There is always an evening hike there. So there are a bunch of things you can do when you're not skiing.
Cool. And ice skating as well?
Ice skating as well, yeah.
So that hike in the gorge, is that the Zammerlochputz?
Yeah, that's true. That's right. It's we have once a week a guided tour through this gorge. And it's really beautiful in the winter. It's so the mountain rescue team is doing that with the guests because nothing happens. But it's really beautiful with all the ice sparkling in the waterfalls. And it's a really must do, actually, if you're in Tyrol West here.
It sounds like there's definitely a value there. I've got one other thing I read about that I want to ask about as well. It says the Kaunergrat Nature Park.
That is our nature park. And in the winter, for example, you can do some really lovely winter walks and snowshoe hikes. You can also borrow snowshoes there and get a guided tour through the nature park. And there are some guides who are always looking out for some animal prints in the snow. And it's really special for guests to do that as well.
Are the snowshoes and the guide free as well, or are they something you pay for?
No, they're something, but not much.
I went to the Pyrenees with the family a few years ago. And one of the activities we did, we were staying in a place called Courtrai, but there's a national park near there. We went out with a guide. It sounds very similar to this. And he just took us, you know, through the woods, you know, pointing out all the different things, looking for, you know, different evidence of, you know, animals or nature, etc. And then we ended up at a big lake. And it was just gorgeous. It was a really nice alternative to a day's skiing. We've had a lot of conversations in our podcast about Tyrol so far, about the amazing mountain huts. Do you have a favourite one of those in Tyrol West?
Oh, it's so hard. I really like them all, and it always depends on the mood you are. So when you want to go to the most funniest host, you go to this hut. If you want to enjoy some great drinks and food, you go to this hut. So they're all special for me, and I really like them all, and I can't choose. I'm sorry.
Well, basically, that's what every guest I've had so far from the resort say. Well, it wouldn't be fair for me to choose, or I can't choose. But, you know, if that's too difficult, then is there a Tyrolean dish that you would absolutely recommend that visitors try?
Yeah, I listened to the podcast last time and Marcus said Kaiserschmarrn, which is a really good dish. But I would say I would do as a perfect mountain hut food. I would have first a grösl, which is potatoes with some local meat and herbs and an egg on top. It's really an easy but delicious dish. And then I would have Kaiserschmarrn and share it with my husband. And then I would, of course, have some schnapps to get everything done.
That sounds like a great lunch. I did read as well about some special chocolate from the area. I'm going to say Tiroler Edler Schokolade. Is that specific to Tyrol West?
That's true. That's also located in Landeck, the chocolatier. And it's a really nice, sweet little shop. They make their own chocolate and they also even do some schnapps into the chocolate, which is a really funny taste. And they try out loads of different variations. It's really delicious. And yeah, it's located in Landeck. Direct about 10 minutes from my office away.
Right, tempting to pop out for your lunch or a snack halfway through the day. That's brilliant, Simone. Thank you very much for that. What I'm going to do is going to put a load of links into the show notes so listeners can have a look at some of the things that we've talked about, and also like a map as well, so people get a fix for it. I really appreciate that. If it's okay with you, I'm going to turn to Al now. Now, Al, this isn't quite as tough a challenge as we had at the London Snow Show, when we had just 45 minutes to summarise our advice on buying skis, boots, gloves, helmets, goggles and socks. Today we have less time on that, but we're going to try and cover two areas, the best helmets and the best goggles for this winter. So can we start with helmets? Like, I've got two kids who are both going out to do ski seasons this year. And I thought, oh, well, you know, maybe they'll be able to use the Oakley Mod, which I quite like. I've been using it. And they tried it and just like did not fit their head at all. So I guess one of the starting points is you've really got to kind of try before you buy, right?
I mean, first off, wasn't London Whistle Stop. That was a rattle through everything really quickly. So, but fit, like we've spoken about with ski boots, like so many things, gloves, goggles, fit is key, especially with safety items. If they fit you well, if they are comfortable, the chances of you having them on your head when you need them is far greater, and you're going to want to wear it. You're going to feel better, have a much more enjoyable day.
Taking that into account then, yes, you should try it before you buy it. You know, fit is key. A couple of, you know, bits of jargon that you might mention when you talk about the different helmets. There are lots of, if you want to take a deep dive, listener, into the meanings of things like shell, liner, venting, buckle, EPS foam, comfort liner, I'm actually going to refer you to last year's episode. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to that when we covered all of that in detail. But I would like to ask you, Al, today, if you could just explain what MIPS is, because you see this label a lot on helmets. Could you explain what that means?
So MIPS is multi-directional impact protection system. Essentially, it is a helmet. You have the shell, the bit on the outside. You have some kind of compressible foam, EPS. So when people listen to the previous episode that we did on this last season, they will know. But then in between that and your head is a plastic sliding layer attached to that compressible layer with some sort of elastication, normally rubber bungees, etc., you know, different kinds of material like that. And what that means is, as you know, if you take a tumble, if you have an impact, when the helmet hits the floor, often it's at an angle and it wants to rotate around your skull, but it's quite securely attached to your head. So if you twist the head really quick, the brain inside the head's going to get twisted really fast. Point of that MIPS layer is that's just a split second, a fraction slower, the rotation, and it's just really benefits how your body, how your brain, how your skull can deal with that impact. So it's when we're talking about rotational and oblique, so angled impacts.
Is that pretty standard across helmets now? Do they all have MIPS?
No, not at all. It tends to be mid to upper price point. Some brands have their own system. So if we look at Atomic, they don't use MIPS at all. They have their own called Amid, which is just various foam layers to do a similar thing. Different brands have different ways of doing it, but MIPS is used by a broader range of brands than most others.
Well, that's really good as a starting point then. So I've tasked you to give listeners your top three helmets for this winter with choices at the top, middle and lower end of the price range. So what is on your list, maybe starting at the top of the range?
So, Kava here, these are new helmets. So normally we talk about this is the best, but these are the new. These are exciting when we tested them. These are what gave great fit and performance. Upper price, I know I said I'd do three. I'm going to actually mention briefly four because you know I love to do this. But one that I absolutely love, the Smith Vantage 2. So the Vantage has been a really popular helmet for Smith. Smith's a huge brand. What I love about this is, A, they do an amazing, like, turquoise and emerald green colorway that looks stunning, and they do a goggle to match. But inside, they use coroid. So think of getting loads of plastic straws, cutting the ends off, gluing them all together. You'd have this honeycomb inside. So you get fantastic airflow. It's mega light. And that also works as a brilliant crumple zone. So not only does it deal with impact, but rotation in there as well. But this does have MIPS in it, a magnetic buckle under the chin, a fidlock buckle. I love this helmet. Fit was brilliant. Ventilation was astounding. It's £235, so upper price point. It is a bit spendy. And then there's another one, similar price, £230, Salomon Arcane Prime MIPS. And as the name says, it has MIPS. And the reason why I'm mentioning this very briefly, it's a new helmet from Salomon, and they have this cool kind of, it's almost like a gutter around the outside of the helmet. And it's not, it's just like a ridged system. And it secures the goggle strap really well onto the helmet. And it stops that wobbly helmet strap. It just keeps it on your head. And the helmet looks cool. So, but yeah, the Prime for me, that Smith Vantage, the Vantage 2, the venting was astounding.
Well, I will put links to all of these products that Al mentions in the show notes. So listener, when he's talking about the different colorways, you can be able to get a feel for what those are. What about in the middle of the range then? I mean, 235, as you say, is quite spendy. Something a bit more affordable?
So I'll take a bit more of a breath when I talk about this, because I'm not going to try and squeeze an extra helmet in. So Atomic Revent Amid. So last season they brought out Revent GT, quite an expensive helmet. They did a visor version, but now they've got all sorts of Revent Amid. They've got a light plus, so different price points. This sits at £160. It has their new Amid system. So this is their essentially their take on how to deal with different angled impacts. Little pillars of EPP, so polypropylene, expanded polypropylene foam. Looks like little blue octopus tentacles. It's quite cool inside. The thing that I loved about this is it's in mold, so it's nice and light, but it's just so comfortable. They do a Saver visor now. It's not the kind of helmet that I would choose my kids skiing. It doesn't suit my style that I want. But the comfort is brilliant. And that's what I love about this Revent. It's more of a contemporary look, a better price point than the GT was.
Oh, and can I just ask then? So you mentioned Amid, you covered that earlier. That's the kind of Atomic equivalent of MIPS. Is that right?
It's their take on how to deal with different impacts. Yeah. So vertical angled, but it's still got EPS foam in that helmet.
Okay. And then the other question I've got is that I actually had a look at these as well. And both those two products you mentioned so far, the Smith Vantage 2 and the Atomic Revent, they have audio-ready ear pads. What does it mean, audio-ready?
Yeah, you could get something like Alec Audio Systems, and then it fits in the comfort line of the soft padding inside. There are little pocket systems, so you can have speakers in, so you're not having to wear buds in your ears. You have speakers within the helmet. Great for things like carve.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. So evidently, you know, it is a safety item and therefore it is really important. But if you wanted to spend a little less money, what would you be looking at then?
Bolle is a huge safety company that do amazing goggles, fantastic helmets, but got a new model called the Keystone, and you can get it with or without MIPS. To be honest, for £120 with MIPS, that's where I'd go. It's got a real urban style to it, a kind of skater style, but yeah, the Bolle Keystone MIPS, more affordable price point. Again, just super comfy. It looks fantastic. You don't get the magnetic buckle. You've got a normal Fastex buckle. You know what it is? With helmets, fit reigns supreme. And if it feels good on and if it is comfortable, not moving around when you're skiing, that scores so many points. It doesn't have as much ventilation as the other two. But if you want that urban style, it is fantastic. And again, it's got that MIPS system.
There is a less expensive version without MIPS.
Yeah.
So £30 less, £90. Yeah. You wouldn't recommend that?
I can't remember who once said it to me. If you've got a cheap head, buy a cheap helmet. You know, the extra £30 to look after your brain, I'll pay that.
I think that sums it up really well. I'm going to remember that one. Like I say, I'm going to put links in the show notes to all of those. Let's move on to goggles then. Again, listener, if you want to get some more detail on some of the terminology, I'm going to recommend you listen to last year's episode. I'll put a link in the show notes to that. In that episode, we went into a lot of detail about terms such as a cylindrical, spherical, and toric lenses. We looked at what VLT means, what photochromic means. But today, I know you're going to refer to different types of lenses, S1, S2, S3. I wondered if you could just explain what we mean by that.
All these lenses are going to protect you from the harmful UV radiation. So we've spoken about this in other podcasts before, but that UV 400, you know, you want to block those damaging wavelengths of light. But you can also have different tints. So it allows a different proportion of light through. So we can talk about this as VLT, so visual light transmission. So a lower percentage in that will be a darker lens because it's less, letting less light through. But an easier way is there are sunglasses and goggles protection systems from 0 through to 4. 0 is clear, lets basically all the light through. And then 4 is really, really dark. Basically, your glacier glasses, you're not allowed to drive in them. And the S in these names means that it's for snow sports. So S0, S1, S2, S3, S4.
Oh, okay. So with that in mind then, again, same structure, like you to, you know, pick out the top, middle and more affordable ends of the market. So let's start at the top. What's your pick there?
Isn't it brilliant that we look at helmets and then goggles are more expensive? You know what? There's a load of tech in them. What I love about goggles is that basically most of the parts in a goggle now can be more sustainable using either recycled materials or bioplastics, that kind of thing. So there's two at the top. And the reason why I've got two at the top is because they are so unique, so new. One is by Oakley. It's called the Flowscape. And this is so different. Everything about it is different. They've changed the magnetic system in it. The foam in it is like memory foam, this VR wrap foam that they've got, which is incredibly comfortable. And all of this is designed to give you the biggest field of view that you can. You imagine standing in a really high-tech lift station, big glass screen, leaning forward, you look out over the mountain. That's what it's like having this on your face. So it tilts in towards the bottom of the face. It's called conical. And then it spreads out towards the top of the goggle, is further away from your face. And the vision from it is bonkers. And they've got a single lens. Normally you'll get two lenses with an air gap between. In this, it's a single lens. They bond in the anti-fog coating. And again, this is about giving you the best optics that you can have, but it's £325. It's quite expensive. Does come with two lens and it's super cool.
I mean, that is pretty expensive. I mean, last year we picked the Oakley Line Minor Pro. And am I right in saying that this new Oakley Flowscape, it has, you said, it's got an amazing field of vision. Is it 60% bigger?
No. Honestly, you put it on your face and it's, whenever you put goggles on your face, you can see the frame. And yes, of course, if you, you know, properly concentrate, you can see the frame on this. It is big. That's the one downside, especially if you go for the large model, which is what I had on my face. It is big, so it's not going to work for everybody. They do a smaller one, that's ace, but it's got a certain aesthetic, but it's all about that field of view.
So I think this is funny. I asked you to choose three, but you've managed to get four in there anyway. But go on then. What's your other choice at the top?
I mean, I've got this. This was Head Neves sunscreen, or Neves, however you want to say it, N-E-V-E-S, £330. So there have been other goggles that have tried to do this in the past. So this is an electronic light-changing lens. There are no batteries that you need to charge. There's no switching on and off. It's got a little kind of solar panel at the top of the lens. It's teeny, that charges it. And this thing, it is so different. You get, so photochromic is a light-changing lens. It changes with the amount of UV that hits the lens. There's various problems when they're really cold, they don't go light, which is generally when you want them to go light. This thing is electronic. It was amazing. I came out of a lift station and went between shadows and it was going dark light, dark. And it is so fast. It is incredible. So when you're skiing that tree run and people go, oh, I'm going to go between bright and sunny and the lens is going to change, photochromic can't deal with that. It's 20 seconds, maybe up to a minute to change. This thing is instant. It's unbelievable. Covers categories S1 to S3. So it does for most conditions, £330. So it is expensive, but it is so impressive.
Sounds incredible. This is a completely new technology then. It's not available anywhere else.
No, never that I've seen. It's honestly, you use it and it's so different to other things. It kind of catches you unawares.
Well, that just sounds incredible. I'm going to have to try and I don't think I'm going to be buying them at 330, but I'm going to see if I can test them because that sounds really interesting. Okay, let's go a bit more affordable then because, you know, as you said, those are more expensive than helmets, etc. And £300 plus on a pair of goggles is a lot of money. What have you got around the middle of the range then?
So another, and this is what we're doing, all these models that we're looking at are new for this season. So Scott Ambit, and they do two versions. They do a standard lens, which is £120, or the light sensitive, the photochromic, which they call the Scott Ambit LS. And for Scott, I know that light sensitive are their biggest selling goggles. So £135, it has a new lens. So it looks like cylindrical. So it looks straight up and down, but obviously curved around your face. But actually there's a slight curvature towards the bottom of the lens. There are other goggles that have existed with really pronounced curve at the bottom, but this is a really subtle curve. It does give you better view down below. I love the Ambitech and Scott goggles. I've used Scott goggles for years. You know, the Scott goggles have existed for a long time, but their color handling is absolutely brilliant. And add in the light sensitive tech, this LS. They do various versions, so you can get it that goes, say, between category 2 and 4 or 1 and 3 or 2 and 3, depending on which lens that you get. But they're all the same price. It's all £135.
Oh, that was actually the question I was going to ask you then, £135. So that definitely, you know, sounds more affordable, but you also have another option at an even better price than that.
Yeah, so this sits under the same umbrella group as Oakley, actually, and it's called, it's not an Oakley company, it's a Swedish company, it's called Blizz is the company, and this is a new goggle called the G001, so the Goggle 1, which is weird, they've had loads of different goggles before, but there we go, that's the naming, and it's just a super cool contemporary look, various colours. It comes in this amazing, it's almost like a mini sleeping bag, padded case, which I really, really like, because around the mount you can put things like GoPro batteries in there, or I'm diabetic, so I carry my insulin in it to keep it warm, that's really handy. It just looks way more expensive than it is. It looks like it's going to cost £150, £200. It's mega comfy. It's £79.
That sounds excellent value for money. I'm thinking that that's the least expensive, let's say, like, real goggle that you haven't got in the middle of Lidl or something like that that's available on the market.
Yeah, it's super good. I mean, you can get cheaper goggles, but the quality, fit, comfort and performance of this, it punches way above its weight.
Well, that is fantastic, Al. As always, you know, I love listening to you talking about the kit. And I know that you've tried all of these different pieces before. And actually, if listeners have only just joined us, do you want to, like, give them an idea of how and where you test these different items?
So there is an organisation called the Snowsport Industries of Great Britain, and they organise a major trade show in the UK, and they do the same thing but on snow, where we go and ski. Well, there's over 600 skis, loads of helmets, goggles, accessories, everything for skiing. So that's a really good opportunity. When I'm out there, I'm looking after the test for Fourline Skiing Magazine, because I'm the gear editor for that. We have a brilliant team that tests all of these products, so I get loads of feedback from female testers, male testers, all different levels, which is hugely beneficial. And then anytime that I am doing pretty much any activity, I will be testing something, whether that's on water, on snow. It's amazing, you know, what it takes to actually get a proper handle on these products.
Well, that is brilliant. I know you're going to be joining us again for a future episode to cover some more kit for this season. Listeners, if this is the first episode you've listened to this winter, we also have a complete episode about the best skis for this winter, the best new skis for this winter, and the best new ski boots for this winter, which are both available on YouTube at the Skipedia channel as well. That's great, Al. Thank you very much. Listener, we're going to move towards the close now. Listener, if you've enjoyed this episode, or even if you didn't like it, I would love to hear from you. You can leave us a comment on Spotify, Instagram, or Facebook. Our handle is @SkiPodcast. You can drop me an email to theskipodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on WhatsApp. I release exclusive material there ahead of each podcast, so you can look in the show notes for that link. I have had some feedback since the last episode. Antonia Simpson, she said, I first came across the Ski Podcast at the Snow Show. I really enjoyed hearing about Mount Etna. I was chatting with Shemi Orcutt about that. Since then, I've listened to lots of episodes, Blaine Lines and James Cove being my favourites. I love your focus on train travel. And in fact, I'll be getting the train in a couple of weeks' time to Embrun in France. And actually, I asked Antonia about this, and she has got an amazing price on that train fare. So I'm going to try and see if she can write us a case study for Ski Flight Free. So listeners, if you're interested in working out how you can get really good fares, you can find out more from that. Colin Tierney contacted us. He said, I enjoyed episode 263 about Ischgl. He also told me he'd been skiing at the indoor snow centre in Langraf in Holland. He told me that the train wasn't bad at all. I found out you can take skis on Eurostar as one piece of your luggage allowance, and I had no issues at all on the Dutch trains and buses. And Richard Burlton said, I listen to every podcast and I can't wait for it to drop every week. He also had a question for you, Al, Richard did. He said, when you carry out the ski tests, do you use binding systems so the bindings can be adjusted to the various ski boot sizes? Because he's thinking that would affect how the ski performs overall if they have a heavier system. I wondered if you had a response to that.
That's a great question. And obviously, he is similarly geeky to myself in that he thinks of these things, so which is fantastic. The binding can make a difference. The biggest difference is if you get something like a frame touring binding where you've got a metal rod below the books that changes the flex pattern of the ski massively. Now, pieced and all mountain skis, certainly pieced, a lot of them come where there are rails mounted on the ski anyway, so the binding size can be adjusted for different boots. So that's not adding a different system onto the ski. That is exactly how the customer is going to buy that product. So that's a really, really fair test. It used to be that bindings would come on demo plates, which I'm guessing is what he's talking about, which are a longer track that the binding can slide. So you can slide, generally you can slide heel pieces. You've got adjustment in there, 30, 40 millimeters or more. Toe pieces are fixed, but you can have them that you can change the toe piece. I've done loads of back-to-back testing, and the modern stuff, so look at something like a kingpin, for example. If you have a demo kingpin, it has a track for the toe piece pins as well, and that doesn't massively change how the ski behaves, to be honest. The older, really heavy stuff did, but a lot of the things now, so if some of the bindings we're testing, they will have a certain size range only to what that binding is for a normal consumer, and then they'll have a different ski with a different length range adjustment on. So no, it's not an issue in ski testing nowadays. Yes, it definitely used to have an impact.
Might there be a certain ski that you think, oh, I'd like to try that, but it's been set up with bindings for a different size boot from yours?
Yeah, absolutely. There will be times when I go and we'll stand and we'll try to adjust them and they won't fit. And sometimes you go, you know what, here we go. I need to test this ski. I know the risk that's involved in having my boot not perfectly fitted. I would never advise everyday skiers to go and do that, because you have to adapt your skiing, you have to be aware of it, and that is part of the job. So but that is really, really rare.
Okay, well, that's really interesting, and hopefully, Richard, that answers your question. Right, there are now 282 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with, and according to our stats, 192 of those were listened to in the last week alone. So if you're getting excited about the oncoming winter, why not visit theskipodcast.com? We have episodes on so many different subjects, interviews with so many people, and reviews of, well, quite probably the ski resort you've booked or are thinking about booking this winter. So why not have a search around the tags and categories, and you're bound to find something of interest to you to get you in the mood for this winter. In that last week, around 60% of our listeners were in the UK, 20% in the States, and everyone else spread as far and wide as Kuwait, Korea, and Turkey. In the meantime, if you'd like to help the Ski Podcast, I have just one request for you for this week, and it will save you money as well as help the podcast. If you're booking ski hire this winter, can I suggest you go to intersportrent.com, use the code SKIPODCAST when you book, and you'll get an additional discount off whatever the online price is. And to make it even easier, you can simply take the link in the show notes, and that discount will automatically be applied and knocked off your bill. Right. For now, I would like to thank my guest today. Simone, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you enjoy some great snow this winter, and I look forward to going to Tyrol West in due course, but hopefully not by forgetting to get off the train in St Anton. And Al, again, thank you for joining us. Really appreciate your brilliant insight on equipment.
Ian, I know I always say this, but it has been a total pleasure. Thank you. And getting excited for the snow.
I'd also like to thank Tyrol for sponsoring the podcast. Finally, listener, thank you for joining us wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.